The tale of two churches. I was in on the weekend before the beatification. I was at a church at the cathedral, and if you go to the cathedral, you see the tale of two churches playing out. On the top, you had a traditional mass that didn't barely even mention Romero being led by the Archbishop of San Salvador, the current Archbishop. Below, in the crypt of Romero, you had hundreds of people crammed up into this humid room, basically with carrying pictures of their martyrs, carrying pictures of Romero, celebrating, singing, and talking about justice and God in one voice. And so that's kind of the tale of two churches here. And so you have the conservative church hierarchy and the elites, you know, the those that have continued the oligarchy from the 1980s have been expanded into the financial sector, have joined forces to pressure the Vatican to not beatify Romero. They sent letters. They did what the U.S. has been doing while Romero was alive. Fortunately, that didn't work. And as my friend Carlos Dada, a prominent journalist who wrote a good piece in The New Yorker, said, he said that, you know, this is a moral victory for El Salvador. So in terms of what it means for El Salvador, it means it's a moral victory. It's a validation that, you know, your dead were there with Romero. There were people, they read the names of the martyrs that have died. Church people, non-church people, you know, 80,000 dead, 95% of whom were killed by the U.S.-backed government, according to the United Nations Truth Commission.
Roberto Lovato, we have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for being with us, writer and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley Center for Latino Policy Research. We'll link to his reports at democracynow.org. Speaking to us from San Salvador, I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Maté. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is Donna with your WUSB Concert Billboard. Your Concert Billboard for Sunday, May 24th. The Jerry Jammers, Shecky and the Twang Tones, Noah's Ark, and Brother Pluckers, all at Blue Point Brewing in Patchogue, beginning at noon. Quadrilove Reggae Band will be at the Bamboo Bar in Freeport, 3 p.m. Terry Waldo's Gotham City Band will be at Fat Cat, Manhattan, at 6. Capital Cities will be at the Surf Lodge in Montauk, 7 p.m. Dave Holland and Prism will be at the Blue Note, 8 p.m. Your WUSB Concert Billboard for Monday, May 25th. Trampled by Turtles will be at the Brooklyn Bowl, 8 p.m. The Complete Unknowns will be at B.B. King's, Manhattan, at 8. Gatto Barbieri will be at the Blue Note.
Hi, this is Jim Wiener, co-host of Jazz on the Air, heard Sunday afternoons between 2:30 and 5 here on WUSB. This has been your Concert Billboard. Check out the online version at WUSB.fm.
What's going on? Hey, how's it going, everybody? What's up? It's a sunny Tuesday afternoon here on Long Island. And hey, you know what? You're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. That's 90.1 FM on your radio dial. And if you're tuning in on the web, it's WUSB.fm. You can check out the stream. You can check out playlists. And look at the schedule, maybe find some other cool shows you never even knew were on this station. It is exactly 6:01 p.m., and every Tuesday at 6 at this time, we have Off the Wall. So enough of me. Until after the intro, okay. Thank you. Okay, we're here.
Tell me to stand by. What does that even mean, stand by?
Stand by for the next phase of the show. And this is the show Off the Wall. I'm Kyle, your co-engineer.
It's not the phrase, it's just that it was a command. And I don't take commands well. You know, if you'd said, please stand by, that would have been something. But you kind of barked out, stand by.
Look, I would engage with you on this a little bit, further, but you say stand by to me all the time. I figured that was radio parlance. I was trying to be like the Romans in Rome here at WUSB.
Being like the Romans here in Rome at WUSB. Yeah, no, that sums it up, I think.
Yeah, what could you possibly say to that?
Not much. Not much at all. Yeah, this is Emmanuel, because I didn't introduce myself yet, and here I am, and another Tuesday Off the Wall. They just keep roping me in. I keep trying to get away, and I keep getting pulled right back in. But it's fine. It's fine.
I think it's good for us.
It's good for everybody, I guess. Keeps people off the streets. And school's over. No more school.
Yes, no more school, no more campus services, no dorms or anything. Everyone is gone. They're all looking for terrible summer jobs.
You elementary school kids listening, of course, you still have school. We didn't just say that you don't have to go to school tomorrow. You do. Everybody up until high school, you kind of do as
well. Good point. Yeah, I may have gotten the hopes up of it.
College is different. For some reason, they get out in May in college. And you guys have to go through June.
You'll get this many, many more years in the future, and it'll all make sense down at that point.
And if you're listening in the Southern Hemisphere, where everything is reversed, obviously this doesn't apply to you either. You're about to have your Christmas break or something, so just don't even pay attention to what we say, because it doesn't apply. So here we are. It's post-Memorial Day. Did you enjoy Memorial Day this year?
I enjoyed the way I did it this year. I got to see some flyovers from air shows that were going on. I heard and maybe saw a little bit of fireworks.
That was interesting because, yeah, you know what? We were hanging out on the North Shore, and you know planes, and you were able to say, That's a World War II era bomber coming right at us. I don't know a plane, you know, from a helicopter, basically, in the sky. But when it did fly over us, and it flew directly over us, yeah, it had this, like, wide wingspan and propellers. And, you know, it just threw me back to the 1940s.
A real deep, throaty rumble of the engines, right?
Yeah, it made you basically question whether you wanted to continue being fascist, because obviously that's what we were fighting against in World War II, and that's what those planes bombed the hell out of.
Yeah, it's funny. You look at it and you're like, oh yeah, that you're sure, and then there's that moment right as it's passing over, you're like, I'm sure that's for an air show. Yeah, I mean, you know, they're not really patrolling or anything, or
I wonder, was the guy lost because the air show is at Jones Beach, and that's practically in Queens on the South Shore, and here we are in the North Shore, Stony Brook area. I guess when you're in a plane, you can just do that. You can loop around and cover the entire county. He wasn't anywhere near the air show, but he was flying over. We had our own little private air show, I suppose.
Yeah, and it's a cool thing. I mean, it was cool to hear and just kind of listen to the celebrations going on all over, everyone having fun barbecues and summertime get-togethers, that kind of stuff.
We didn't have a barbecue. Why didn't we have a barbecue? It was perfect weather for it.
Well, I think it's keeping us open to barbecues at unorthodox times, and those are the best kind of barbecues, I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. Winter barbecues, midnight barbecues, things like that. But we did see a lot of aircraft in the sky. In fact, I wanted to tell you this. I forgot to mention this, but a few weeks ago, we saw a satellite, or you saw a satellite. You're always spotting these things in the sky.
Oh, yeah, we saw one or two.
You saw a bright one, and I said, Carl, I'm going to find out what that was. And I did find out what it was, and then I forgot to tell you.
Oh, man, I was wondering if I was ever going to get that.
Yep.
Okay, so what's the scoop?
It was, in fact, the space station.
Really?
But it was not ISS. It was that Chinese space station.
Oh, really?
But do you know that Chinese space station is not occupied? In fact, they're going to bring it back down again. It wasn't meant to last very long, and it's already done.
Chongyang?
Whatever it is, it's going to be shark food soon, because it'll be in the ocean. But they're going to do something else in the future. But you know what bothers me about all these things they send up into space is that they only have a lifespan of like 10 or 20 years. I want them to send something up there and keep it up there and keep building. You know, have a city up there in space. Or just go a little further if the orbit deteriorates. You know, go around the moon then, if that's the problem. The moon stayed up pretty much every year, you know, it's without any decaying in its orbit. So I think we can do that too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, speak for yourself. I mean, I've already started. I'm actually opening a convenience store and service station in orbit.
You know, if you became, you know, Bill Gates squared or something like that and had the money to do that, would you have to fill out any forms? Could you just launch into space and, you know, screw you, U.S. government, this part of the moon is mine, I don't have to pay any taxes.
Right.
I don't have to, like, obey a speed limit. You know, just how much control are we trying to take over space now, on top of everything else? Because, you know, the oceans, underground, everything is pretty much controlled somewhere. I wonder, you know, if you just went up there and did something out there, could you just do whatever you wanted?
It's safe to say I think you can do what you want in space. I mean, within reason, there are some international agreements and so forth, as far as I know. But they're small. I mean, they're sort of in-kind agreements, and I guess there are larger, maybe space treaties or
the space treaties,
newer kinds of things
that apply to other worlds. I mean, do we really have the right to say, okay, this part of Mars is Norwegian territory? You know, you're not asking anybody from any other planet that might have a stake in this, or any other solar system. You know, it doesn't necessarily apply in the same way.
Yeah, I think that's the appeal to those that are really optimistic about that technology emerging and becoming really, really viable and fervent and flourish and something that's flourishing. But we're at the like very early stages of that kind of next period of exploration.
I feel like we are. I really feel like we're at the cusp of something really new and exciting, where all kinds of independent projects are being sent up, and you know, private enterprise is a good thing in some cases, but at the same time, I don't want to see NASA diminished in any way. I don't want to see the European Space Agency diminished. I want to see everybody working towards something, you know, more science on the part of governmental agencies, maybe more risky exploration for the commercial enterprises, you know, sending people to Mars in a one-way ticket. That's kind of interesting, although crazy, I think. But yeah, you know, we're hearing more about it. We're hearing more about space, about launches, just about what's out there than ever before. And I think a lot of that is because we're discovering more. Science is bringing us all sorts of information about planets that are you know, millions of light years away, and just the universe. We're learning more about it every day, and I don't think we appreciate that enough.
Yeah, I just hope the spirit continues in a positive direction, and that it is an agreed upon place where mostly peaceful things occur. And it's
you really think that? Huh?
I'm not so certain in practice. I mean,
do you know a single science fiction story that takes place in space that does not have a war in it somewhere?
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so that's I think the growing pains of what we're looking at, and even I'm critical. I'm fantastically excited about private industry helping out a lot with space, but the kinds of the monumental technological feats and investments and craftsmanship that are needed to really make space logistics something we've mastered, it's going to take a totally new kind of enthusiasm, and it takes cooperation, I think, from really skilled companies that goes beyond profits. So in other words, I'm saying I think the companies that are capable, both old companies and new private companies or government institutions even, the ones that are very capable, I think that to actually realize a lot of the really big stuff, they're going to have to get along and communicate and share in the right ways. I'm sure there will be a lot of protecting of assets and intellectual property and so on and so forth, but I think it's overall a good trade-off. New problems and new things to solve and new hopes as well are worthwhile in the face of inaction. Yeah,
new life forms. That's what I am interested in. That is the one thing that I want to see during my time here on Earth, is a new life form from a different place, different
right.
planet.
But look at the surface. I mean, to speak of new problems. I mean, an example would be like copyright and intellectual property stuff we see all the time mm-hmm. here on Earth. But could you imagine if a particular company does find a species or something, and they decide that their method of caring for them is a patentable technique, and all of us, and it, oh, by the way, is the only way to actually communicate or take care of or help or whatever the goal is, right? They co-op it and monopolize it, and then use access and their dominance to keep other people away from from space, something that is inherently, as you said, not something anyone really owns.
So you think we're facing a future of interstellar patent trolls?
Well, I think that's coming. I think that's that's probably already here. I think that's something it pervades a lot of innovation. And I just think compared to a lot of the logistics and technical stuff that we're doing here on Earth, stuff we want to get right, you compare that to the actual problems for space logistics,
mm-hmm.
You're going to need some serious innovation. And to bring basically patent baggage from Earth to this new frontier could really poison the waters, I think, for actual development and inertia, the moving kind of inertia. So those are my concerns, and I think other people probably do have opinions about this, and I think we need to be very vigilant and really. Individuals, people that are passionate about these things, organizations that are passionate about these things, should have equal say and an equal ability to participate in developing new technologies, new platforms, and things like that. It shouldn't just be co-opted by one space corp, A versus space corp B. And you're already seeing it. I believe SpaceX sued the Air Force
SpaceX sued the Air Force?
Or Boeing for dominating the bidding process or otherwise, having a monopoly on contracts with the U.S. Air Force. So something like that, but for satellite
Well, that's
launches.
Not intellectual property. That's fairness in equality as far as having a chance to bid on something.
Right. So I'm just thinking that the profit motive and short-term planning for the really monumental problem solving that would need to occur to actually have permanent space stations and things like that, I think is going to take corporations really, really approaching their business from a totally different perspective, really long-term investments. Not this like, okay, the only way we're going to start this new transport company or the only way is venture capital. Venture capital is great at putting a lot of money in and short term.
It's short term,
but it really wants its money back as far as interest and so on and so forth. So I think it's problematic to apply terrestrial business models and corporate greed in something that really needs a lot more imagination and innovation. And those companies doing a sort of bad job of implementing that and protecting their quote monopoly or whatever it is, aren't imaginative enough. If they're short-sighted and they're dominating the access to perhaps a spaceport or a particular technology to get up into the stratosphere or something like that, they're going to want to maintain dominance and not really push as much as a group of people that are cooperative. And I think that those models, I think, are going to be important and in balancing that. Because I find that when, there are really skilled companies that don't realize they could bring something to the table and they're sort of set in just their little sort of safe game. But again, the kinds of problem solving would need a lot of innovation and a lot of really creative thinking from craftsmen and organizations and even governmental, like I said, that really know this game and what I refer to as space logistics and stuff. So.
I just want to go into space, all right? Leave all the legal maneuvering and corporate nonsense to people that stay on Earth. But I want to go into space. I want to explore. Not necessarily personally, but I would like to see what it's like up there. The important thing is to learn what's out there, because so much is out there. The vastness of it all. That's something that, they try to hammer that into our heads, and it just never really seems to take, because we just keep thinking that we're the center of the universe when obviously we're not. I don't know how we can really live knowing that we are so completely unimportant in the bigger scheme of things. Kind of is depressing when you think of it that way. But by the same token, I think somehow there is power in that. Somehow there's power in that knowledge. And maybe the answer is someplace in there as well, as far as how do you explore something so vast when you're so infinitesimally small. That's what we have to learn. That's what we have to focus on. And one thing that we have to do is start thinking bigger than our own tiny little pursuits.
Yeah, really, really big. Like, think of scale and then multiply that many, many times. We're still working and industrializing on nation state levels.
It's ridiculous.
You know? And I think even regions are based on a lot of history and colonialization and stuff like that. Like, but even Canada, I mean, I feel like we don't even really talk to Canadians, and they're such great people. I mean, there's so much closeness in our regional likeness with being a part of the Americas. But for crying out loud, we don't know anything about South America or Central America, let alone interact with like Mexico and stuff. So it's very funny. Yes, lots of progress to be made.
Absolutely, absolutely.
We'll come back to that, I'm sure.
We will. And on that note, though, of grandeur and vastness of it all, FA Cup final coming up this weekend on Saturday. Finally, yeah, it's all over after 15 rounds. We started last August with Nunnington Griff, and you know, way back there, the extra preliminary round. And now it's finally going to end in Wembley Stadium on the 30th of May. Our team, Aston Villa, after we've been through about 15 teams, so that's the team we're going to go with this time. They're playing the champions, Arsenal. And hopefully Aston Villa will win, because if they do win, they'll get into the Europa League next year, which is the European competition, the sort of the second-tier European competition as opposed to the Champions League.
Right.
Arsenal, they're already in the Champions League because they've already placed high enough in the Premier League that they can do that. So they gain nothing from winning. They really gain nothing from winning the FA Cup. They can't be in Europa League and Champions League. And Aston Villa, if they lose, they get nothing. So it's kind of, if we're going to follow anybody next year, Aston Villa has to win. That's how it works. So anyway, that's the Saturday coming up.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll look out for that. Thank you for that update.
We can finally stop talking about this.
We can. We can never stop talking about football.
But the Women's World Cup is next month.
It is. It's coming up. That's exciting. Yeah. That could be really, really neat. I've already seen a little bit of... some advertising and some run-up, some anticipation, I think, all around for that.
Well, you've seen that on Canadian TV.
I have.
Which we've been watching a lot of, you know. It's some really interesting things on there, like APTN, one of my favorite networks, Aboriginal People's Television Network. Why don't we have a network like that in this country for Native Americans? We have nothing. They have two different channels up there, pretty much the same network, but with time shifting and all. And they have all kinds of news and native speaking and just culture, and they have that for all kinds of different ethnic backgrounds, and it's a really healthy way to explore this.
Yes, it is. It's certainly cool to see, and I think there is more of it. It is steadily, I think, picking up. There's a lot of I think emphasis on Indigenous peoples doing their own media, right? Uh-huh. Being able to do their own storytelling, and it's really ties in quite a lot with Native peoples being oral tradition since in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. and storytelling in general being critical to traditions and culture and so on and so forth. So it's really a cool thing for us to talk about, yes, and be able to see. And I think I met a couple people in school, and you know, were young film students and so on that were working on projects with. But I think it turns into like a lot of local public access type things. They're not
yes.
yet kind of on that nationwide level. I don't know what it takes to get on a satellite channel like that, but it would be cool to see that kind of step.
Well, that's the thing. That getting on a nationwide satellite channel, exactly what we need here, because. In Canada, it's mandated. Everybody has to carry APTN. It's on both satellite services. It's on all cable networks. It's even broadcast over some TV stations. We don't have anything like that in this country. We just have, you know, Home and Garden TV or Travel Channel. Just basically, you know, another channel that's pretty much like all the other channels. And I've noticed that. You know, I've noticed that has happened in so many ways. You look back in the 1980s, 1990s, when certain networks were just starting out, like, the Arts Channel, which became Arts and Entertainment, and Bravo, and things like that, they were different. They had all sorts of niche programming. And then they gradually all sort of became the same. They all started having commercials. Like, even Independent Film Channel is crap now. You know, they used to show independent films. They don't anymore. They show TV series, and they have lots of commercials, just like every other network. And it's just weird to see how this kind of happens in our country, where something starts off as unique and different, and then it literally is a melting pot, where it just kind of turns into the same mush. And I think Canada is more of like a patchwork quilt, you know, kind of a rainbow thing going on there, where the individuality is held onto a little bit more. I would like to see that happen in this place. Yeah, you know, it's kind of a parallel to our states. A lot of our states just are very similar to each other, and they have the same chain stores, the same values, you know, the same points of reference, same language. You know, I'd like to see that mixed up a little bit more, because that's when you learn about diversity and different ways of doing things.
Very true. All good points.
Well, anyway, so that's that. We have a bunch of people that have written into us. Actually, before we get into some listener mail, you know what? Actually, I do want to get into this piece of listener mail, because this one kind of annoyed me a bit. Let me read the one that doesn't annoy me first. This person says, OMG, you guys are too funny. We really enjoy listening to your show and your rants and your opinions and your travel logs. Please try not to get discouraged over the pathetic state of the state and the technology and the station receiver / transmitter, etc. Please keep doing what you do. You do make a difference. We are supporters of WUSB, by the way. Love the show. Thank you. All caps, Chris and Bob from Mastic. Thank you so much for writing in. And letters like that really do make a difference for us, so you make a difference as well. It's great to hear from people, whether you're in Mastic or Monterey or wherever. People all over the world can listen to us.
Yeah, yeah. We tell ourselves we are critical of our own work here, and we also tell ourselves, yeah, I did pretty well. Yeah, that was a good show. Mm-hmm. But, and sometimes the opposite. Sometimes we're really upset about the show. But the point is, it's a vacillating kind of humbling experience, and we are constantly working on doing things better. I am by no means perfect. I'm learning this vintage board here at WUSB and all the ropes and whatnot. And we do kind of move up and down on our professionalism scale, but we really get a boost. I don't know. We get a lot of encouragement from people actually acknowledging us and mm-hmm. yeah, just saying what worked, what did, maybe even what didn't, but definitely things that they liked. Lets us know not to be so critical of ourselves.
Exactly. Yes, because there's other people there that'll do that for us.
Which I will say, that's true. They are always there to give us their opinion. We've upgraded a couple things. There was an engineering team in here earlier today, I heard. And while several little small lingering technical issues have been ironed out here, so we should be sounding better than ever right this very moment.
Very cool.
Yeah, just wanted to update everyone about the technical achievements here at WUSB Stony Brook.
Let's look at another. This is from Diane. I have to say I am very disappointed that you have not been talking about what is happening with Black Lives Matter. Haven't heard you discuss Baltimore. So disappointed that I turned you off. Every now and then I tune back on to see if maybe you were finally talking about this very important subject, but no.
No, I'm sorry.
Before you get into this, Kyle, can I just read a second letter? All right. Can I do that first?
Sure.
All right. That letter from Diane came in about a week or two ago. In late April, Diane also sent a letter to the other radio show, apparently for this radio show. So it went to the wrong place. Okay, you know, mistakes happen. But here's what that letter said. I have to say I'm very disappointed that you did not talk about what is happening in Baltimore today. So disappointed that I turned you off. Every now and then I tune back on to see if maybe you were finally talking about this very important subject, but no. Here's a suggestion, Diane. You know, if you're going to criticize, and we like criticism, we really do. It's a good thing to criticize and to find things we could be doing better. But at least if you're going to criticize us twice, write a different letter the second time. Don't just carbon copy it and change a couple of words, because that makes it seem like you're not really putting as much effort into your critique as you want us to put into you know, our analysis of what's going on in the world anyway. And the funny thing is, the ironic thing is, that show back in April that she wrote to the wrong address to criticize, we were talking about Baltimore. In fact, when you were disappointed and you turned us off, that's when we started talking about Baltimore. And then when you turned us back on, we had moved on to something else. So maybe we didn't spend as much time as you wanted talking about that particular subject. A lot of subjects that we cover, maybe some you find valuable and some you find a waste of time. But that's just the way it is in the world. You know, you can't agree with everybody. But, you know, to expect us to somehow sense that this is what our listeners want at this particular moment, that's it's ridiculous. We can't do that. And you got to give us a chance. You know, at least listen to the show before you criticize it. You don't say we didn't talk about something when we did. It just happened to be when you were turning off the radio in disappointment. So, yeah, we talked about Baltimore. We talked about all the things that led up to Baltimore. And we're going to talk about Cleveland today a little bit. So she might have gotten disappointed already and turned us off again. We'll get another letter. But, you know, that's the thing that really gets me. I'm not objecting to the criticism at all. I don't like laziness. Sending the same letter twice, that's too much.
Yeah, I would just, from what you said now, the gap in there, obviously, that comes to mind immediately for me. It's like, okay, there's several months, weeks, yeah, if you didn't listen, well, maybe we talked about it every single show in between. Did you think of that? I mean, that's to just write us off or presume we're never going to get to it, that's kind of a leap. And I also don't really like being scolded for not bringing something up that I will say, I mean, race and society and stereotypes, sort of our prejudices, casing people out, you know, making someone, making them out to be someone who, just because they're different, they might be dangerous, you know, having those kind of just completely irrational, but kind of real fears and anxieties, whether it's external or you've had personal experiences or maybe you haven't had enough personal experiences, that's an everyday struggle. That's something we deal with, we acknowledge every day. And to be scolded about it. And I don't think I wasn't down there. I don't think I'm particular, you know, I'm not a particularly like, official, voice. I mean, I don't feel like I can speak on behalf of that movement personally. I mean, yeah, I'm a guest. I occasionally speak on things that I know a little bit about. If I knew a lot about it, if I professed to be a bit more of an expert on the particulars of any of those things, I mean, the stories are the stories, and we do try to bring them up as much as possible, as much as possible. But it doesn't support you very much if you're not actually listening and so on. And I just want people to know that it's always something that we think about. We're quite sensitive to it, and it's an everyday thing.
But I mean, I hear what you're saying about being scolded. It's you know, it's a way of speaking down to people saying, you have to address this issue in this particular way, or I'm going to be angry. You got to open your mind a little bit. Maybe it's going to be addressed in a completely different way, and maybe it won't be addressed the way you want it to be addressed, or not as much time given to it. Or maybe some other story will be focused on instead, which will bring out another issue. It's not like the issue is not being talked about. It is being talked about in many, many places, some good, some bad. You know, these expectations can get a bit tiresome when you're expected to do a particular thing. You know, it's almost like reading a script. We do things our own way, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm even disappointed. There's things, yeah, that I want to talk about that I don't get to talk about. That maybe are too personal, or I'm too biased, or I have nothing but vitriol about a particular idea or something. And I'm, you know, mad as heck that I don't get to express myself. Consider that. I mean, yes. Consider that. There are boundaries, and there's a lot going on, and that, you know, it's not that we're insensitive, and just, I don't know, keep listening, but yes. We're human. Give us a chance.
Exactly. So, okay, Cleveland. This interesting story again. Cleveland has a horrible, horrible record with police killing innocent people. We've seen so many instances of that over the years. And this week, and I can't say I'm surprised, the cop who was accused of was it only manslaughter? Yeah, he was accused of basically standing on a hood of a car and executing people through the windshield.
Like Terminator or The Punisher or something out of a comic book.
Now, in fairness, there were 137 shots fired at these two people. So you don't know for sure that his shots were the ones that killed him. Is this really the thing that makes him innocent? The fact that you don't know whose bullets killed them. The fact is, a lot of people, all 13 of the cops that unleashed, unloaded their weapons on this car, they're all guilty. As far as I'm concerned, there's just no debate about that. They killed innocent people that were posing no threat. Why is this an issue? Why is this something that we can't all agree this is wrong? This should not happen. It's not a mistake. This is not a mistake. When you have 60 cop cars, yeah, this is what happened. 60 cop cars, more than 100 cops pursuing this one car for more than 20 miles because they heard a bang. And it turned out it was the car backfiring. Now, you might say, well, you know, if these people weren't so, were innocent, why were they running? Well, there's 137 reasons why they were running. You know, Cleveland already had this reputation for killing innocent people. You know, they've had it for a while. And black people certainly are right in the crosshairs. So yeah, you know, I don't think I'd stick around if I saw cops chasing me. I think maybe it's not the best decision, but I can see making that decision, and I don't think that's worth being executed over. So they chase these poor people for 20 miles, 100 cops, and fired 137 rounds at them, killing them. This is huge. This is a serious issue, and there is no justification for it. And yet, we see justification for it. We see people go to any discussion board on any news story, and you'll see people saying the cops did the right thing. These people are out of control, meaning the people in the community that dare to run from the cops, or that are committing minor crimes, or are suspected of committing minor crimes, or come from broken homes. Yeah, that's a crime too. You know, all sorts of things that they will put on the victim to blame them, to make it seem like, well, the cop had no choice. You know, the cops had plenty of choices. They were in no danger. Why did 60 cop cars have to chase one car? You know, that's the question you start with. You know, where is it written that this is how you deal with a situation like that? You know,
that seems more like a fox hunt.
It really does. You're right. It's exactly like a fox hunt.
Where's
like,
okay, the bugle?
I'm sure there was a bugle. They just basically say, okay, the hunt is on. I saw this happen once. I think it was on the either expressway or the parkway. I was driving back east, and all these cop cars went tearing past me. Must have been about 30 of them at least. I've never seen anything like it. And, you know, I never found out what it was from the cops. I called one of the local news stations and asked them, hey, do you know why 30 cops just came tearing over the Queens border into Long Island? And they said, yeah, somebody was being chased for escaping a traffic stop or something like that. You know, an overreaction. Odds are you have the license plate of the car that did this, okay? Why risk the lives of everybody on the road by chasing somebody at high speeds and then having a confrontation at the end that's not going to end well? And then basically ruining your career as well, because you will be held accountable in one form or another. It's just the tactics are just insane. We saw something last night, just happened to flip by on the TV, video of something that happened in London, where this guy was apparently out of his mind. He kept saying, I'm your king, or something like that, and he clearly wasn't the king. He was an African, I can't say African American, he's in Britain.
Black bloke.
Okay, that's, you can say that, right?
A black bloke.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
It annoys me having to, like, get the phrasing exactly right, or I get accused of something. A black person, I think, is the right way to say it.
A bloke of color.
Person of color. I think that's a stupid phrase. I'm going to get crap for this. But it really, because it implies that there are people that have no color, and I think everyone has color in one form or another. I'm not sure exactly how we're defining color, but color is to me, flavor. All right? And when you say this person has color and this person has none, you're kind of insulting them. And I don't like to do that. I don't.
Yeah, I think there's a huge range, and it's all color.
So I'm going to say black guy in London. Can I say that? Is that all right?
For sure.
No one's going to get offended.
Oh,
okay.
For sure.
So black guy in London was freaking out and saying, "I'm your king," and was being surrounded by all these cops, and they tasered him, and it worked. You know, tasering is not. You know, it's not a way of raising your voice. It's something that should be used in worst case scenarios. I do think that worst case scenarios. Not a gun, a taser. It worked. The guy basically just collapsed and was taken away. Didn't die or anything like that. Was not shot. None of the cops had guns. They didn't have guns. Now I was looking at that scene and look this up. The video is on the internet.
They just cuffed him after he was.
Yeah, this is how you handle a situation like that. It's not the best outcome, but nobody got killed. There wasn't this. We had to like that. They shot the guy in Times Square.
Right.
Was basically walking backwards with a knife. This guy had a knife.
Right.
All right. And nobody was injured because they kept their heads. And also, they didn't have easy access to guns.
Right.
And this is what we keep going back to. The easy access to guns, whether it's law enforcement or regular civilians, that causes so many more problems than it solves.
Yeah. It's that thing that it is on your hip or under your shoulder, under your armpit, or in your purse, or on your ankle, or whatever, you know, that is the first thing you reach for, really? Really? Mm-hmm. You're not going to think about maybe what you're doing, you're just going to be impulsive? I mean, I don't know, I mean, the taser, I mean, can be abused.
Absolutely.
I mean, people have died from them. I don't think that's not an excuse, but there are a lot of ways to handle situations, mm-hmm. and subdue someone, calm them down. It very much should be considered a health situation. Mm-hmm. And I think mental health is a whole other area, but related area of this.
And there are times when you just need to back down yourself. You know, if you're a cop,
right.
You don't always have to tackle the guy immediately or whatever.
Sure.
You know, talk it out, wait an hour, wait 10 hours if you have to, whatever it takes, because that person's life is your responsibility as well as the lives that you're protecting in everyday life. You know, it's something that I think is forgotten because there's this mentality that they're in the military and they have to take down the enemy. And that's what has to change. That's what's wrong in Cleveland. That's what's wrong in Baltimore. That's what's wrong in just about every city in America right now. It's this mentality, this militarization. It's so unhealthy, and I don't know where it's going to go.
Yeah, that combined with like kind of pack mentality and people projecting their own prejudice and not separating their discrimination and personal biases from the role, from mm-hmm. the responsibility, from the office. You know, you are an officer of the community, right? You hold office in the community's minds, in our backyards. So,
yeah,
you know, it ought not to be something that everyone now is potentially a threat just from a misunderstanding.
And the rest of us, when we see people standing up to this and protesting it, we should be thanking them. We should not be criticizing them or labeling them as the problem. They are not the problem. They're the solution. People who have the guts to demonstrate, to stand up to this kind of terror, and it is terror, because we don't know what it's like to grow up African-American in this country. We do not, but I do know that everybody that I have talked to who has grown up African-American in this country has experienced this kind of fear, this kind of abuse. And it's not something anybody should have to deal with. So you might not know what it means when you see people demonstrating, but you certainly can learn. You certainly can ask questions and get involved. Instead of doing what this jerk in San Francisco who worked for KGO, he tweeted while there were demonstrations going on in Oakland, because Oakland has another vile police department, looks like the born losers or protesters will be in Oakland tonight. Help OPD, Oakland Police Department, uses real bullets. Now let's get back to hoops, basketball game. That was a producer at KGO. Needless to say, he's no longer a producer at KGO. Ouch. Of course, now he says, in the past, I have been frustrated with the violence that followed peaceful protests in the city of Oakland. I expressed my frustration by tweeting inflammatory things directed at those violent individuals. Those tweets were inexcusable and do not reflect my true beliefs about their cause.
Of course they don't. No.
I mean, come on. You really expect people to believe that? I am all for forgiveness, forgiving people a second chance, but right. At least I will respect somebody a lot more who stands up for stupid things they say than try to hide themselves and say, yeah, I didn't really believe that. I said it, but I didn't really believe it. You know, don't say it if you don't believe it. Realize what effect your words will have.
And definitely, just as to add or unwrap something that you mentioned, I mean, it does impact you if you... I mean, I know you were speaking to something else, but just because you have not grown up as an African American and had direct issues, think about the impact on your psyche, the kinds of prejudice and the kinds of anxieties you project on your environment and people around you, who really have no business with you projecting sort of your own insecurities and so on, whatever that is, that social ideology, that attitude, that prevailing attitude, can really be poisonous and insidious mm-hmm. to people, and it perverts, you know, your impression of the community, and really, you know, you start looking for the worst in people, and the media compounds that. As you said, like, these paramilitary police departments are really terrifying, and you see them responding and the way it's painted in the media, the way they talk about it and little attitudes like that. Clearly he's been impacted by some pretty awful attitudes that have absolutely, you know, have everything to do with the black experience mm-hmm. in America. It's just the other end. It's him speaking as though they are all one, you know, speaking to them as the they are the other, you know, they're different. Yeah, that's not normal.
And you can't possibly get in their heads and see what your reaction might be. Maybe you would burn down your own neighborhood. You know, that's always the thing. Why do they burn down their own neighborhood? Personally, I would not burn down my own neighborhood. I'd go to the neighborhood of the people that I feel are guilty and burn that neighborhood down.
Right.
But that's just me. You know, when you're angry, when you're frustrated, when you're back into a corner, there are all kinds of things you might do that are not right. But I'll tell you this, buildings recover. Buildings can be rebuilt. Human lives cannot be when they're destroyed. And not one person died in the riots in Baltimore. Not one person. But how many people did the Baltimore Police Department kill who were innocent? And Cleveland and Oakland and Detroit and NYPD. You know, that's what's got to stop. That's what the problem is. And we need to realize that, all of us, and stop focusing on our own fears and saying these people are the problem and they're causing society to fall apart. And it's just... That is the problem. That attitude is the problem.
And do not validate their authority, because there's no such authority, right? It mm-hmm. is not valid. In a situation where constitutional rights, freedom to assemble, these things like that should be protected, and people should be able to speak up when it's not right,
yeah.
when really awful stuff is occurring.
There was a curfew in Oakland saying that you could not demonstrate at night in the last few days. This has not been covered in the news.
Okay.
Unless you watch foreign news, when it gets Russia Today and Al Jazeera, they cover this, but CNN, you won't find it there. But yeah, in Oakland, you could be arrested just for being outside demonstrating or just being outside at all. You know, that is not right. You know, that's completely wrong. Healthy demonstrations. Look at Europe. People throw all kinds of things at cops in Europe, and they survive. I'm not saying it's right to do that, but it's more of an equal thing. You know, cops versus protesters, it's not like the military crushing Iraq. You know, it's basically an even battle, and cops get injured and protesters get injured. Again, not a good thing, but a much better thing than having these military equipped police crushing any opposition and making it so people are afraid to speak their minds or raise their voices or stay out at night or anything like that. That's the real scary part as far as I can see.
Yes. Well, let's keep that going, though. Let's hear more voices, and including yours, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear you respond, react, critique, give us some feedback. Let us know what you think on this and any of the other issues we've brought up.
Yes, and we do bring up quite a lot of issues and all sorts of things to talk about and share, and all kinds of things that we don't have time to get to. Things I wanted to get to tonight that we won't have time to get to, unfortunately. But that's just the nature of it all. That's how it works. Trying to think if there's any other bits of email. You know what? We'll get to other pieces next week. Yeah, any other topic that I bring up is just going to bring us over, and then Finn will be angry at us.
Can I play this ID?
What ID do you have?
I don't know. It says Dolby. I want to know what it is.
Let's hear it.
Hello there. My name is Thomas Dolby, and you're listening to the airwaves of WUSB Stony Brook.
Well, there you go. Now you know.
Is that Thomas Dolby? Now, it's...
Are you going to ask me a question I don't know the answer to?
Never mind.
Make me feel like an idiot?
Someone can write in about that ID and tell us all about Thomas Dolby.
I don't... Okay. You want to play another random ID and quiz me on that as well?
I'd be happy to, yeah. if you'd like.
Hello there, this is Thomas Dolby.
You played the same one.
I'm in England. I'm able to tune in to WSB.fm via the web.
Okay, so he said something different that time.
That's right, he did. He said that he uses WUSB.fm when he's at home in the UK.
All right. It's not the Dolby that created Dolby Sound. It's a musician.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I realize that, but I wanted to be sure. That was my question, yeah. So thank you for answering that. And I'm... Let's see, I talked about that.
Yeah, I talked about this.
Okay, I'm...
Hear about the kids who got hurt by the bouncy house in Florida? Why would anybody get in the bounce? I don't understand this. A bounce house is apparently this inflatable house that kids bounce up and down in. And apparently, in Florida, a waterspout occurred underneath it. It was swept across a parking lot into a roadway. Well, fortunately, the kids were ejected before all that happened. But here's the thing, and this is what really you might not know about. Upstate New York last year, two kids were seriously injured when they fell nearly two stories when a gust of wind swept up their bouncy house they were playing in. The number of bounce house? Okay, fine. The number of bounce house-related injuries have risen, from 1995 to 2010, have risen 1,500%. That, my friends, is a problem. We have a bounce house problem in this country.
They're really dangerous. And the good thing is that kids bounce.
Well, yeah, they bounce, but not from two stories, all right? That's a little much.
Well,
all right? I don't understand parents who are freaking out over, you know...
Who's
living in the neighborhood, or a kid walking down a street by
yes,
themselves,
yeah, yeah.
That they flip out over. But you know what, Bobby, go into the bouncy house and soar up into the sky, and somehow you're not going to get hurt. What is wrong with them? From 2008 to 2010, the rate of injuries have more than doubled. All right. In 2010, 31 children were treated in emergency departments each day on average. According to this report, that's one child every 45 minutes being injured in a bounce house. They say the pattern of injuries is similar to the injuries suffered from trampoline use, but there are national safety guidelines for trampolines. There are no safety guidelines for inflatable bounce houses. So, folks, this is something to think about this week. Bounce houses, how they affect you.
And we'll be back with another exciting episode of Off the Wall another week, because that's all we have for you this week.
I want to get a bounce house, though, just to demonstrate the danger. Where do you get one?
To see how far children bounce.
Yeah, or, you know, whatever. People, adults.
They should have adult bounce houses. What do you think about that?
Well, I think an adult can go in a bounce house, don't you think?
Not as many as lots of kids. You can only have a couple adults. It's an adult-rated bounce house.
A big bounce house that's the size of a city block or something. Then it won't float away as easily.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Maybe they have them. All right.
Bounce house on the moon. All right, think about what could happen there.
Moon base, yes, the moon base. Hey, there's no pigs on the moon.
We don't know that for sure. I wish you wouldn't keep saying things that you can't prove.
Or pepper spray.
All right, well, you know.
Or tasers.
Uh-huh.
Or guns.
We'll see.
Forces preventing residents.
Oh, yeah, kids. This is Finn. This is Finn's Revolution right here on WUSB Stony Brook until the 9 p.m. hour. In just a moment from now, we're going to give away one pair of tickets to see the Long Island Roller Rebels roller derby team right here on Long Island, and check that out. But also, we're celebrating the birthdays of Miles Davis, Mick Ronson, and many others. Stay tuned. Giveaway in a moment.
Roller girls!
Yeah!
Let's give it to them! One, two, three, four!
All right, kids, yeah. We love the Roller Girls. Right now, we're going to give away some tickets to this Saturday's bout over at Safe Skate America in Old Bethpage. And it's going to be an absolutely amazing bout with the Long Island Roller Rebels. I'm giving away a pair of tickets right this very second. The doors open at 7 p.m. First whistle's at 8 p.m. You've heard me talk about roller derby for years now right here. I've had the Derby Girls on. Give me a call right now. One pair of tickets. Right now, 631-632-6901. That's 632-6901. One pair of tickets right now for the Long Island Roller Rebels this Saturday night. It's going to be spectacular. I'm going to be there, too. Give me a call, 631-632-6901. Yeah, and don't they? Long Island Roller Rebels, we're going to give away another pair very shortly, so stay tuned for that. Congratulations to Michael for getting himself a pair of tickets to see the Long Island Roller Rebels this Saturday night. And you can always check it out at longislandrollerrebels.com and scope it out. Great, great derby action. As you know, I'm a huge fan. I will be there this Saturday night at Safe Skate America, ironically named Safe Skate America, I think, in Old Bethpage. But check it all out at longislandrollerrebels.com. Try saying that if you're in a bar. Yeah, that's right. So tonight we're celebrating the birthdays of several people before we give away another pair of tickets to the Rebels. And one of those people is Mr. Mick Ronson. Mick Ronson, the iconic guitarist for Mr. David Bowie way back in the day, the guy who plays all over everything from The Rise and Fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars to Aladdin Sane to the you know, all this great stuff. And so anyway, here he is with Bob Dylan playing live during the Rolling Thunder review during Maggie's Farm. And this is him on guitar, and you should dig it. And happy birthday to Mick Ronson.